Okay, hello and welcome to episode number 104 of the Three Drinks In podcast. I am your host, Vince. Over there we have Phil.
Hey.
Phil says hi. In this episode, we are talking about episode number 13 of Star Trek Discovery and giving a review of the NBC show The Good Place, starring Kristen Bell and Ted Danson. Couldn't think of his name there for a second. So no guest this week. It's just going to be kind of doing double duty on these two different shows. But we figured, you know, the microbrews were great, but we're taking up too much time. So we figured we'd crack open a full episode for the for these two topics. Before we get to all that, though, please go over to iTunes. We are available there on Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn. Search for Three Drinks In Podcast. You'll easily find us. Hit that subscribe button so you never have to miss an episode. And please leave us a rating and maybe even a review. We saw we have a few extra ratings. Not sure when those appeared there, but we really appreciate those of you who have been rating us on the iTunes. Very helpful for us. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at Three Drinks In Pod. That's at the number 3 Drinks In Pod. We're on Instagram and Facebook as well. And if you want to email us, it's 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. That's it. Sit back, relax, and here we go.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?
Did I mention that I started watching the Assassin's Creed movie?
No.
The other day.
How's that?
I was really curious about it, and I think I recorded it off of HBO on my DVR, and then I was sitting at work at lunch, and I was like, just kind of flipping around, eating a sandwich, trying to figure out how to kill 10 minutes, and I'm like, well, let me just put this on HBO Go for a second, see how bad it was, and I'm like, wow, this is really bad.
Yeah, that's too bad.
It kind of makes that mistake that a lot of movies based on video games make, where they sort of throw you right into the middle of the action. Mm-hmm. But like, which is sort of a good strategy when you're talking about screenplay development and structure, and that, like, you know, start in the middle of something. Don't spend time like explaining who people are, but actually, you know, begin the process. But that isn't what happens in these cases. They explain it all really quickly, and they don't bother. You're not quite sure whose point of view you're following, because like the guy doesn't know what's going on, and like you just go through what would probably take, a good half an hour in a decent film in like 4 minutes, and you just sort of rush through it, and it's supposed to give you the illusion of like starting in the middle of a story or starting off with an action sequence, and it doesn't come across like that. And it's like, oh, this is kind of
that's too bad, because it had such a good premise.
It does. It's really the most, I would have thought, the most easily adaptable of all these kind of games. The other thing that really pissed me off was that they had changed what the Animus was. Like,
yeah, it was like a thing where he's strapped in, but he moves around.
Yeah, I'm like, no, that's really dumb. The whole idea in the game was that you just, it's a VR, plug yourself in, and you experience somebody else's memories. Because, I don't know, I mean, there's kind of a weak premise in terms historical DNA stuff.
It was fine enough in that, like, it was supposed to be dangerous at the same time.
Right, it was not something that was, you know,
yeah,
good for you.
Yeah. And like, he was gaining the skills of the people he was imitating as a side effect of also going crazy.
Yeah, like he would have flashbacks while he was in the present day, and he was freaking out.
Yeah, he'd see like images and visions and like hallucinations, and they were like, oh yeah, that happens sometimes. And like, that was what made it interesting, was that there was a risk involved. I don't know what the premise of the movie is, and I'm sure they were just strap him in.
Yeah, and they put him. They actually give him the daggers, like real daggers to run around with. Like, well, what's the point of that?
He's still your prisoner, right?
Yeah, I mean, and like the cast for that movie was ridiculous. Jeremy Irons and
budget was
Marion
high.
Cotillard and
yeah, that's why everyone was like, maybe this one will be good. It wasn't.
No, man, it's too bad.
That they have a Tomb Raider coming out this year that's supposed to be like the one that'll finally be good. I don't have high hopes for that either.
Yeah. Starring absolutely no one you've ever heard of before.
Yeah. She just looks like the person on the box. That's why they hired her.
So. All right.
Anyway.
Star Trek. Discovery.
We should have spent the whole day sending funny gifts to ourselves.
Just images of pure frustration.
Yeah. Like, what's the best way to sum up how I'm feeling about this right now?
Yeah. Well,
but it would have taken all day.
Yeah.
And I was working.
Could have been doing that constantly. You had sent me, like, I almost told you that I didn't want to do this week because, like, you had sent me the article from avclub.com by Zach Handlin. With, you know, you were saying, like, this basically encapsulates how I'm feeling about this show right now. So if you really don't want to hear us yammer on it, you know, about this one more time, then go to avclub.com and, you know, look for this article about the last episode because it's pretty spot on in terms of what we've been saying for the last so many months at this point.
Well, yeah, it's been a while now.
Yeah. But I don't know, like the guy made a lot of the points that I had in my notes. That I was like, oh yeah, I thought that too. That was really annoying also. And so like we'll still talk about it, but if you want like a very good and pretty well written succinct version of this conversation, go check out that article.
It's like that Simpsons where he's like, you know, for more information, you can listen to us or tune to another channel. Wait, what? Oh, don't turn to another channel.
Wait, what? Yeah. So this is 13. What's past is prologue.
No, actually, yeah, what's with all the Shakespeare titles?
Overcompensation.
What?
Overcompensation.
Could be. Yeah, the last one was Macbeth.
Oh, yeah. What was the last one? What was it called again?
Vaulting Ambition.
Vaulting Ambition.
Which is Ambition Over Leap, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And this is, you know.
From The Tempest.
From The Tempest. It's, you know, and I looked it up, like I couldn't recall the context of the scene. It's they're talking about the fact that they think that Ferdinand has been killed in Prospero's storm. There's two guys, I can't think of it, Antonio and Sebastian, are talking about, you know, who's going to take over in, where are they from, Verona? I don't know. Wherever they're from, like, who's next in line for the throne? And they give you the guy's name, and they go, oh, Jesus, this guy sucks. And basically, what's past as prologue means everything that just happened is only the preamble to what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
Which is even more infuriating once you realize that. Because it's just like,
if that's what applies to Star Trek, then yeah.
Yeah. It's like 13
episodes. Yeah.
13 rambling, disjointed, nonsensical, poorly structured, half-ass acted, you know, well-paced episodes. That are only supposed to get, and like, I don't mind that, like, big setups. That can be fun. I mean, when we get to talking about The Good Place, I mean that's kind of the same thing. What happens in the first season of that show, except masterfully done, versus this, which is clumsily done.
Well, it's only different if it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter on Star Trek.
Right.
I don't know what the point of the past 13, especially the last four when they're in the mirror universe. What was the point of all this? Well, why did we have to deal with all of that?
Did you watch the next week on?
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, spoiler alert, since she takes, you know, Captain doesn't speak English very well, or Emperor doesn't speak English very well, back to, you know, the good universe, and they find out that they've lost the war, that they're now going to pick her brain, because she's vicious and psychotic, for how to really kill the Klingons this time. And so she has all kinds of tactical, you know, ideas and weaponry things, and they're going to use her as a resource to kill all the Klingons. All right. That's sort of...
Okay.
That's creating a problem that, you know, like, it's... You know, there's like, you don't know anything. You're in such a bubble the entire time, and then when you get back to the real world, you're still in that bubble, and you're going to remain there the whole time. This is something you've been saying for what's that?
What do you mean bubble?
Well, you've been saying for a long time that, like, we never see what's going on anywhere else. There's no sense of, you know, how the war is progressing, as they've been doing all their things. You know, spinning around space, you know, jumping and doing what have you. We don't get a sense like we did in, like, DS9 during that war, that, like, other people were out there dying. Other people were out there doing this. Progress was being made, you know, on this front, on that front. You know, it's a grand story, but we were so tightly focused on one or two characters, not even, like, the whole ship, that... just kind of felt claustrophobic, and I agreed. I think by having them come back, and, you know, we have a whole new set of shit to deal with, and they're caught behind enemy lines or wherever they are, it's further isolated them from the rest of the Federation, which is mostly gone now, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, the preview made it sound like they were just losing very badly.
Didn't he say, like, lost? I thought he said lost.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, he's like, oh, we've lost. And then the preview is like, oh, we've lost about 2/3 of our territory. I'm like, okay, well, that's clearly not lost.
Yeah, it's still...
It's losing.
Pretty significant.
Yeah.
But... So I had some notes. Did you have any notes?
I did, but they're all just disjointed, so you go first. All
right, so... I mean, despite the fact that, you know, generally was kind of dumb, and we didn't really walk out of this experience with a whole lot to show for it. You know, we have that one character who, you know, went from one universe to the other. I was disappointed that the lieutenant from, like, the first two episodes or whatever, like early on, who gets killed by the tardigrade, that wasn't Mirror Universe Lieutenant Lady.
No, she was just Lieutenant Idiot.
Yeah, so, like, he opens up all, first of all, people pointed out in all these articles that I read that, like, his entire, like, crew, all the people loyal to him, all happened to be on this ship, and he opens up their cells and, like, oh my God, you're alive! How did you get here? How'd you get us out? And it's like, yeah, they didn't really explain part of that, did they? They just...
Yeah. And wasn't that ship supposed to be, like, really big?
Yeah, it's supposed to be huge.
A lot of people on it.
Yeah.
Didn't feel that way.
No. It was three corridors, I think. I mean, to be fair, it's kind of like a, you know, like the old Crown Victoria. It's mostly air.
Yeah.
A lot of empty space.
A lot of, yeah, negative space.
Negative space. But anyway, so, like, he opens up her cell, and, you know, we all thought that, okay, well, if he's, you know, evil, you know, Lorca, maybe he brought over evil Lieutenant Lady, too. But no, she was an idiot in the good universe, and here she's an idiot who's evil.
Yeah.
She didn't get any smarter.
But no, she was his regular mirror... Lady.
Yeah. So that was kind of a letdown. And there was this whole thing about, like, the evil Stamets was they were really sucking the energy out of the mycelial spore network. And by doing that, they were going to destroy life itself all over the multiverse.
Yeah, that's when I texted you. Because I texted you that little picture of the woman going, wait, hold up. And I almost paused it. Like, wait a minute. Wait. Wait. What? Why would that destroy all of life and existence? When has that ever been a thing? That wasn't mentioned once. It was just this network of subspace plants and spores that these creatures use at the time to transfer themselves across the universe. Like, okay, that's unusual. How is that connected to every living thing in the world? It just, all of a sudden, the stakes were raised for no reason.
And the somebody mentions that, boy, isn't that really dangerous and stupid to use? Like, let's just pretend for a minute that isn't a bonkers concept. Like, somebody points out, like, boy, wouldn't it be a bad idea then to do this, even if it gets you a tremendous amount of energy? And someone says, well, they're very short-sighted and they don't have enough respect for life. I'm like, there's being short-sighted and there's actively destroying yourself. Like, the implication was that the Terrans knew what they were doing was ultimately going to destroy life itself, yet they were doing it anyway. That's so stupid.
If that's meant to be some sort of political commentary, it washed right over me because everything else was so stupid that I wasn't paying any more attention to anything they were saying.
Yeah.
So like that, and then like apparently he made like time to make the Terran Empire glorious again.
Oh,
I missed that line. I didn't even hear him say it because it was just one more piece of word vomit and all the other nonsense they were spewing. So it, like, that had no impact either.
No. And I mean, it just kind of makes your characters really, stupid and unthreatening in that same regard. Like, if they're so dumb that they would do this, and even though it makes them powerful, doesn't, like, the fact that they would make such a poor decision, and like, I guess maybe that's a really ham-fisted political commentary for, fossil fuels or whatever, but Jesus Christ. Because I went back and I took a look at just the first, like, the opening 10 minutes of the episodes of Enterprise that took place in the Mirror Universe. And, they were all crazy in the same kind of way where they were mutinous and violent and just nuts, but they also had very clear goals. Like Archer's, evil Archer's objective was to save the Empire. In that story, they're fighting a war against rebels and it's not going very well. The Terrans are losing, and so he's like, we need to go get the Defiant and go into Tholian space and get the Defiant and blow up everyone we know. All for the Empire. And like they seemed reasonable. They had goals that made sense. They just behaved differently and they had different personalities. But they weren't idiots.
Well, that's what the whole thing with when DS9 was doing that, and at that point in the time period in that side of the universe, that they had lost and they were enslaved and the rebels were now in their own empire and they were just as cruel and vicious. But there was at least a little bit of nuance to some of them. Yeah. Probably just the O'Brien character. he was a vicious kind of guy, but he also was like, I'm not going to randomly discriminately kill people if they can help me. Versus the way they used to be in like with Shatner, where they were one note Johnny villains. And that's what they were in this. And like, I can't take it seriously. Just think about it for 10 seconds logically. Everyone in the universe is going to kill everyone else as long as they're in charge. How can anything function that way? How is there anybody left?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened to Lorca when they got there too. He went from being a poorly written, I can't tell if he's a good guy or a bad guy character, to Snidely Whiplash, where like he had the chest plate and the sword. I'm like, wow, okay. What happened to the nuance here? He's just a villain all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It was very disappointing.
I was going to say, Stanley Whiplash. So yeah, that was kind of stupid and frustrating. What was the other thing I had there? Oh, so this is more of a nerd comment, but at some point, Burnham calls the Discovery and says, "Like, so listen, this is what's going on, and you know, don't come get me yet because you know things are crazy over here, and you'll just get sucked in and killed." And then she tells them, or someone says to someone else, "Well, just stay at warp so you can't be boarded. But come close to me, but stay at warp so you can't be boarded." And I thought to myself, well, when you're at warp, you're going pretty fast.
Yeah, it's like driving the car at 60 miles an hour past this taco stand.
Right.
Technically, I can't lob the taco in, but...
But also,
you're
like,
no longer close to the taco stand.
You kind of have to go pretty much in a straight line. Otherwise, you'll veer off and it, like land. Like it's like Han Solo says, you got to go straight. Otherwise, you're going to, you know,
right.
warp yeah. into a sun or something like that.
Yeah, if you don't go straight, you'll flip the car over.
So are they supposed to circle the runway at warp speed?
I don't know.
I mean,
you can't be boarded if you put your shields up either.
Yeah, there's a lot like. You just fucking wait there till I tell you to come get me, then warp over, and it'll be fine. But stay in. Like, that's the kind of stuff that drives me crazy. Because it's more obvious to hardcore fans like us, like, okay, well, if the technobabble doesn't make sense on a very basic level, that means you really don't know what you're doing. And it's obvious that they don't know what they're doing from a story standpoint, too. And the guy over at AV Club, you know, it says, like, you know, this could have been just the fine, forgettable, you know, sci-fi show that, you know, nobody really, you know, thought too much about. But, you know, it's not. You've decided to trade on this name. And, you know, you've just decided to ignore a whole avenue of storytelling that's been employed by this franchise for 50 years. In addition to that, you aren't bothering to get the details correct. So they're just, it was just obvious that they were continuing to crap all over this because no one's ever bothered to think about what they're doing.
Well, I mean, if they had just spent a little bit of time, I mean, the story doesn't even make a ton of sense because she says, you know, stay at warp, they won't get boarded. We have to blow up this giant thing. This is enormous ship, size of a city. Once the Discovery shows up to rescue her and blow up the ship, there's no pushback on that. The ship doesn't fire back at the Discovery.
No.
And so there's a lot of fighting hand-to-hand combat on the ship with Burnham and everybody, but the ship isn't firing at them. So, like, what's it doing? Is it just sitting there waiting for her to get beamed out?
Essentially, yeah.
This was the problem I had with the finale of Enterprise. At the very, very end, when those two weirdos just suddenly show up on the ship. Like, you know, in any science fiction show, when two ships meet and they're opposing one another, they try to blow each other up. Before you magically beam onto the deck somewhere, you know, so that like Discovery showed up. I thought there was going to be like a space battle. There wasn't one. They didn't do anything.
No, all 18 people who were left alive on the Sharon or whatever it was called, you know, were busy kicking each other's asses to man the controls, which you never saw. Like, it didn't look like a ship. It just looked like a throne room with a big ball in the middle of it. But
yeah.
This is what the guy said that I want to quote because it was really kind of right on the money in terms of what I'm talking about. So he says, "I've been trying to cut back on my use of the term fan fiction as a pejorative. It's the sort of vague, overdone descriptive term that can mean anything and nothing, like calling someone you don't like a hipster and just assuming that everyone agrees exactly on what hipster means. So when I say that Star Trek Discovery is like fan fiction, what I mean is it's a show that uses the tropes of an established franchise without any real understanding of how those tropes work. And it's written without the craft or patience necessary to tell a story that means something outside of our recognition of those tropes. That's what I've been saying pretty much since the beginning. They have no respect for the franchise. They don't have it in the general sense, in terms of developing character and story, and they don't have it when it comes to the practical sense of using this story universe's science fiction rules to move their characters through that story. And it eats at me, and it drives me fucking crazy that they're just supposed to spin around in circles at warp speed. And no one's supposed to notice that. You know, it just drives me crazy.
It just bothers me, all the bad writing and I always compared it, and it bothered my wife because she enjoyed Sons of Anarchy, and I'm sure most people do. It was on a long time. But the difference between a show like Breaking Bad or Fargo versus Sons of Anarchy, which is there's no there. There's no thematic lessons. There's nothing under the surface. There's characters aren't learning or doing anything that's native to what they would actually be doing if they were people. And so they're only doing what the plot requires them to do,
right.
Which is awful. It's a terrible way to do anything. You know, if we need this guy to suddenly be a good starship captain, well then, damn it, that's what he's going to be, despite the fact that his species is afraid of everything in the universe. And they have a freak out every time they sense that something might be wrong.
Except now, even though it's the most dangerous thing he's ever done. Yeah. And he's like, I'm okay, guys. We're going to be fine.
We're going to be fine. The history of the multiverse rests on this guy's shoulders. And he's afraid of everything. And I just thought it was like, it was a huge missed opportunity. It drove me, I was very upset about it, like sad. Because I'm a nobody, and I could have done a better job. Sorry, everybody who wrote on the show. He gives them some speech. They find out that the captain that's been in command of them is not who they thought he was. Mirror version, woo. And so they're on the ship, and he's like, you know what? The hell, we don't need him. We're a great crew without him. We're going to do things the right way. And everybody smiles. And that's fine. You can give that kind of speech. But if he had just sat in the chair, put his hand on the console, and turned the fucking lights on. Why? Because it would have been a thematic message of, we are now past this, and we will be better than we used to be. Why? Because the guy couldn't have the fucking lights on. That was the whole reason the ship was dark. He couldn't see. So they dimmed the lights, and it cast this pall over everything. If they had just done that, brighten up the ship. Look, now we're onto something new here. Oh, it would have gone such a long way to like engaging the viewer.
Yeah. Visual storytelling.
There's an idea.
Yeah. No, that's a really, really good point. First of all, no one seemed to really be bothered by the fact that they've been flying around with the evil doppelganger of their famous captain for the last so many months. Like, somebody had a line in one of these articles reviewing it saying that his reaction was the same as if he was just told the mess hall was out of pudding.
Yeah, was that in the New York Times article?
Yeah, that was a pretty
good... That was a good article, too.
Yeah. Good for you, New York Times, reviewing Star Trek. But yeah, like, nobody really was like, oh, how about that? He was evil? You know what? I thought he acted a little funny. It was just like, as if they were all like, you know, I can't say I'm totally surprised.
Dibs on his office.
Seriously. Who gets his triple?
Yeah. And that article put up the same kind of point I'm making, in that at one point, Michael Burnham says to him, if you had just asked us, we would have brought you here.
Yeah.
Because we're the Federation and we're good people. And you know that. Although they think of them as weak. And then you kind of think, maybe there's a point to this. Maybe some of that has rubbed off on him, and we can examine these two value systems and make judgments. But no, you guys are weak. Or maybe, I mean, how can you make a value of a system That clearly works. That's like
Yeah.
saying America is a crappy country, that democracy doesn't work. We can have debates as to the effectiveness of the systems, but clearly the country works.
I
The
mean,
Federation still existed.
I guess possibly from his racist and xenophobic point of view, it doesn't work if you have all the aliens running around. Like he, from his, the only thing we know about the Mirror Universe Terrans is that they're xenophobes, and they have no respect for, for aliens. So I guess he, his point of view is that, like, well, it does, what you have doesn't work because, I mean, it's a kind of a weak argument because clearly
Yeah,
the
but they could
practical
have.
functionality of their government and society is intact, even if you don't agree with how they do it. And that
Because it
could.
seems like they're going to look at that, like when she can, the Emperor comes back to this universe and we're losing the war now, and she could say it's because you guys are weak, and we can say maybe we have been a little bit on the weak side, but then you can go too far and become bloodthirsty tyrants. But just none of that is explained. We're just, all right, well, you guys are. We're evil. You guys are good.
Yeah, I mean,
Okay.
every shift they do, like every time they do this, because I guess the idea is now that we're supposed to, this is the new thing now. It's integrating this evil character and, who was an important mentor to, the good doppelganger of her was an important mentor to our main character. And, that's what we're doing now. Like everything we're doing now is different. Initially, it was getting the spore drive to work. Then it was, using the spore drive to fight the war. Then it was getting lost there. Then it, like, it's we're still not sure what's going on. The show is about, it's basically had like seven plots in 13 episodes, and they're
Yeah.
all radically different from each other as well.
There's no emotional through line. I don't know what to care about here,
No, because
which
like
has always
when,
been the case. And now it's one more wrinkle. I'm like, all right, whatever.
and then when Lorca falls through the hole in the floor, which by the way, why would you put that there? Who thought that was a good idea? Like it wasn't even a force field. It was just like a protects us from space, but not from falling through it.
Can you imagine being like the guys who designed it? Like, sure hope we don't fall in while we're building it. Well, they also had like the guns in the hallway, in case of a coup, press here.
It's pretty much what that's for. Only two of them, though.
Yeah.
Two guns. Because that'll do it. And then,
Well,
like, the force field that basically goes away after you shoot it a bunch of times.
those were awful. And then the plan of, don't worry, I have a plan to get the ship back from
I
Lorca.
know! The
The
plan
plan
was
is to
to
get
walk into
kidnapped.
the room.
Yeah.
And then we'll
Hopefully,
kick the
disarm
guy.
them.
Of course, this is a terrible plan.
Course, this is a terrible. And, like, at first, I thought, like the Discovery comes and shoots a ship, shoots a torpedo right on that spot, and they all go flying. I'm like, when is that ever a good plan? What if you blow your own people up by mistake?
I mean, not to mention
Getting caught is not a plan.
people who were going on, about how the fight choreography was good. And no, it wasn't. It wasn't good at all. It was clumsy and awkward because, I mean,
I thought it was fine, but I didn't care.
well, you have. I mean, there's first of all, it looks weird on Star Trek to have there'd be
All I
so
kept
much.
thinking was, why didn't they just pick up the gun?
Yeah,
Yeah.
but like. The winner of the fight has to be, Michael and the Emperor, who have a combined weight of maybe 192 pounds. These are small women, and I can kind
You're
of
a sexist.
buy, right now, right? Like I can buy that, they're both well trained, they're both warriors, and the Michael has some kind of a Vulcan, martial arts thing, but like. It still doesn't change the fact that it looks funny. And unless you're doing it well and showing how the fact that, despite the fact that they're both small, they're very successful in the fighting, but it wasn't. It was just basic, throw a punch here, dodge that, catch this, someone's hitting sacks of meat in the Foley room somewhere, and You're supposed to think that these two women have overpowered all these stuntmen and Lorca. And it just didn't, like, I'm not saying like that they couldn't make it look good, but then they didn't. Mm-hmm. So people are kind of going on about it. I'm like, no, this is not what you were hoping would happen with this. So yeah, no, I was just
really rough.
Really,
bad. Really rough.
Really. And like I tried to watch that show After Trek. I just kind of clicked on it, you know, where you had left off on it, and it was Anthony Rapp and Jonathan Frakes and Matt Myra sitting there just jerking off about this and like talking about this. Jonathan Frakes is, you know, he's really selling it. Like he's in there, he's like I can't blame them. They're all getting paid a lot, and they, you know, they have to go in there and they have to, you know, make the case for this. And I'm sure if you were ass deep in it, you believe in it and you think it's good. And just like anytime I've ever been in a play or directed a play or did anything theatrical, where I knew it really wasn't very good. But when you're so close to something, you can't see that, number one. And number two, it doesn't help you to see it, you know, because there's, you know, you're just a cog in a big machine. So
yeah, well, if there's no show, then they don't have jobs. So.
Right. So but it's still awkward to see people sit there and like try and make sense of this and sort of defend it. And I've not yet read a single argument, and we've been through a lot of literature about this on the internet, where someone's making a really cogent argument for why this is good.
You know, all I keep thinking is, the first seasons of all Star Trek shows have not been good.
But Star Trek, though.
Yes, but I'm not worried about that because they all did change a little bit. I mean, Deep Space Nine changed enough that it was like, okay, this is not really your father's Star Trek. You know, but it was different back then. First of all, people didn't get online and complain. You know, you got what you got. And a lot of it was just, you know, the effects were bad. It was a cheesy TV show on network television. And the actors weren't, you know, they were out of nowhere actors. They were nobodies, and they had to sort of grow into it. Some of them.
The quality of television
some
back
of them never
then
got any better.
Right. Yeah, but the overall quality was poor.
They knew what they were doing, and even the shows that, so like Deep Space Nine and Voyager, weren't totally sure. They changed their missions a little bit, just enough, you know. Like they had to sort of grow into what they were doing. This show doesn't seem to know what it wants to do or be or how to sell itself. So, you know, it'll take more, I think, for this show to get better than the other ones.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, Next Generation's problem the first couple of seasons was budget. They didn't have enough money. All right.
They had old sick Gene Roddenberry meddling.
Yeah, there was a pretty decent documentary I saw, I think on Netflix a while ago, that was talking about, like, you know, I can't think of the name of it now, but
yeah, I saw that too. I think, yeah, I told you about it. It was very good.
It was good. It was basically how Gene Roddenberry was nuts, and he was old, and he was crazy. Which, nuts and crazy are the same thing, but sure. And all the people who were writing on that show the first couple of seasons were pitted against each other, and nobody got along. And there's one guy who's written like an unauthorized history of the first couple of seasons. He was at the convention we were at. He had like a booth set up in one of the rooms. It was like selling his book. I can't think of his name now. But like there was no cohesion in the writer's room, and it was kind of all over the place and nuts. But it got better when the writing, you know, improved, and really the staff was sort of wrangled and everyone got on the same page. But, I mean, so I guess you could make an argument that that situation is similar to this one, and that nobody had really agreed what the show was going to be doing, but you didn't have to because it wasn't serialized. Because it was pure episodic television, you could be forgiven in 26 episodes a bad one here or there where like it didn't make a lot of sense. That crazy clip show they did for no reason. Like there was a whole lot of shit in that first two seasons of Next Gen, but nobody was trying to string them all together. And so we didn't expect to have an overarching narrative. And so you could fix these things with the best of both worlds by, you know, basically shooting a movie and getting things back on track and showing that, like, we're going to have character, you know, small character arcs that, you know, grow and become familiar. But the stories are going to be different every week. And, you know, we'll just get better at this and sort of hone how these characters interact with each other in this futuristic environment. This show, because of the way that they make TV now and the serialization of it, you know, they kind of have their foot in both worlds. They're doing an episodic thing where it's, you know, there's a new problem every couple of episodes, but they don't connect well to each other, and they're, you know, they're just there to, you know, artificially give emotional weight to things that don't have any to begin with. I mean, like, nobody cared that Lorca died. Nobody.
No.
The audience, the characters, not a soul. And then DS9 gets better only in, you know, it just sort of, it takes what it had and does more with it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Voyager never really gets better because it's the show that doesn't change. And then Enterprise, you know, they're all so different when you think about how they improved themselves. You know, like DS9 really didn't have to change a lot about what it was to get better. It just kind of had to do more. You know, and they, you know, there was the war and there was, you know, they introduced new villains, but basically it was leaning into what they had decided to do was to make a sci-fi show where nobody went anywhere and everyone had different goals and no one really got along. And it was, how do you get these people to get along to the point where they can work together to solve problems on a week by week basis? You know, and that was kind of what they wanted to do with Voyager, but they just got over that really quick and it became a Freak of the Week type show.
Mm-hmm.
And then Enterprise had to, you know, they tried to fix their issue by, you know, creating the whole Zindi arc, which is an artificial thing, but it worked in the sense that we're going to experiment with a pure serialization where we tell a single story over 26 episodes. And so they all kind of solve their problems differently depending on the show. But you're right. These people have such a mountain to climb to figure out how to straighten this out. Because right now it's just a jagged mess. So, I don't know. I've been rambling about it now for quite some time.
Yeah. So, anyway.
We'll see.
Yep. And what else did you want to talk about?
I started watching The Good Place, and then I told you about it, and then you started watching The Good Place.
Yeah, my friends Matt and Muffin told me it was the thing to see. So.
Yeah, it's, you know, they're just wrapping their second season, so we're a little bit behind the times on this one. But I think we're also coming in right where everyone's starting to take notice of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, word of mouth is catching up to it, and people are now aware that this is a thing. So what did you think of it?
I thought it was good. It was funny.
Yeah.
The first season is on Netflix, so we binged it like, you know, maybe a week. We watched two or three at a time because it's very much a show that needs to be watched that way. I mean, maybe they don't think so, but it is.
You mean like one after the other?
Yeah, you got to watch them one after the other in succession. It reminds me a lot of Arrested Development that way, which was a hilarious show, but so many of the jokes built on one another and were dependent on you remembering what happened.
Right.
And it's no, to me, it's not a surprise why Arrested Development didn't take off. It's because if you just wandered in one day and started watching it, you'd have no clue what was going on.
Yeah,
and the Good Place is very much that way, you know. Like, I can't say like, "Hey, you should watch this show this week." No, you've got to start from day one, otherwise, it won't make any sense. Which is fine.
Yeah.
It's just, it really helps to watch it that way.
Is there something about it like this and Arrested Development being comedies that it's less forgiving if you just show up? Like, yeah, like there's, that's the thing. Like, you can't watch anything casually. You have to make a commitment to begin in episode one and start from there.
I think they got to come up with a better name besides sitcom. It's not exactly a situational comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more of a, these things are happening and they're just making jokes about them. It's like if you and I were hanging out at the bar and you just wandered in on us hanging out and we were telling jokes, but it's not because like I threw a pie in your face or my in-laws are coming to dinner and I hate them. And every time I walk out of the room, the person I'm trying to impress walks in. You know, like so many episodes of Seinfeld or even Frasier were like that, where it was very dependent on who was in the room, where they were going, what they wanted to do. You know, most things in The Good Place take place in two spots.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, what do you think about this? Well, what do you think about that?
Well, I think you make a good point that saying that the term situation comedy doesn't really apply because the situation was never supposed to change. Like when you think of Friends, you know, I mean Seinfeld is the perfect example of this because the entire, you know, the thing that they agreed upon in the writer's room when they began to write the show was that not only can the situation never change, but the characters can never change. The only thing that changes is the stuff that happens to them. And, you know, it's the exact opposite of serialization, you know, in its purest form. It's why it's considered the first postmodern show, for whatever the hell that means. But, you know, the situation was that you have four people who are single, living in New York, and that's it. You know, Friends was, you know, six friends, people in their, you know, in their 20s, in that time after college where your friends are your family and they're all living in New York. And they go through the situations you go through, but they never move. You know,
right.
there was one weird season where, like, Chandler spends half his time in, like, Tulsa.
Yeah.
For some reason, I can't remember, but, like, that didn't, like, it didn't really go anywhere. And they stopped it because it was dumb.
Like, what would happen if we put the four characters in a parking garage? What would they do? What happens if we put them all in a Chinese food restaurant? What would they do? It's not, you know, one day George is in love with someone and then he gets married and then they have kids and then, you know, the natural progression of a person, let's say.
Yeah.
So The Good Place is very much, where are the characters at this point? How have they changed? What's different about them from last week? Because they don't go anywhere or do anything. They're trying to learn how to be better people so that they go into the real good, like the girl is not supposed to really be there. And how do we get her to become a good person when she was not a good person to start with?
Right.
It's all about their change and growth. So you have to watch it in order.
Yeah.
You know, and they all do a very good job of that. I think Ted Danson gives a career best performance. He's very, very good.
Yeah. I mean, yeah,
very good. He's 70. That's amazing.
Is he 70?
Yeah.
My God, he looks fantastic.
I know.
Yeah, all that energy. It's just, that's amazing.
Pilates. I don't know.
You know, blood of virgins or something. I have no idea. But, you know, good on you. We should point out, by the way, that I've only seen season one, so we'll only spoil for you up to that point. If you want to stop talking, if you want to not hear this and stop listening, go ahead and do that now.
I think is this our first spoiler alert thing?
Mm-hmm. We give them every so often.
Okay. But like, remember the last time we said spoiler alert?
There's a pretty big spoiler at the end of the first season, so if you don't want to know what it is,
turn this off now.
Okay. We've warned you. Yeah, he's great. I mean, Christian Bell is good. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone in this is really, like, there's no kind of, like, weak note. Like, this guy's not funny or this guy's not, like, the, I don't know, the guy who plays Chidi, he's great. Like, there's nobody in this who is just like, eh, that's kind of a weak one. Like, they're all so even, I felt. Like, all the episodes, none of them stood out. It's like, this was a particularly funny episode. They were all just solid and even, and they flowed very, very quickly from one to the next. And it was probably the easiest show I've ever binged before. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really do that, like, watch a bunch in a row, but, like, you know, I find it very, very natural just to kind of hit play and watch the next one. And then when I found out that, like, the twist at the end of the first season was really interesting, then I think we barreled through the last three the other night, which, of course, my wife fell asleep during the end of the last episode.
So the end of it? Oh, really?
Yeah, she can't stay awake. That's an hour and a half worth of TV. That's a lot of TV if you've been working all day and you've been running after a toddler. So, like, it was a lot to ask, and I have more, I think, staying power for sitting on my ass watching television than some people do. But yeah, there were jokes that stood out. There were, funny moments, but I never felt like, well, that was kind of a weak one. Each episode was so supportive of the previous ones that, you didn't feel like there was any one episode that got more attention than the other ones, or like ones that kind of got they kind of phoned that one in, which was sort of nice.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
And the world is just clever. Like, it's just a really interesting, they're consistent with everything in terms of like how things operate. And I love Janet.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
I mean, it was very interesting to me that I'm going to take this concept and not hold back on how weird it is.
Yeah.
And the special effects do a good job of that too. Like, yeah, Janet is the being that people from The Good Place have that will get you anything you want. And she's not really a person. So like, he sticks his hand inside of her mouth like she's a robot and she can blow up and explode and make things appear. And the demons and all the other characters like walk around like rock monsters when they take off their human skins and stuff. And you're like, wow, this is like the weirdest fucking thing I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
But they don't back off from that, and you can't. You just got to do it and joke about how silly it is, and that's how you all get through it, But there was plenty of times where my wife and I turned to each other like, this is fucking weird, right? Like, yeah, I like it. Yeah, me too. You just keep watching it.
It was really different.
But if you do a good job, you can buy into that.
Yeah.
Did you like the twist at the end of the first season?
I was going to ask you. I was surprised. I can't say I was stunned. Like, it's, that's kind of where, the thing about shows about the afterlife, I've discovered, as I've never actually seen one before besides this one, are kind of like prison TV shows, which I mentioned before. Like, the fact that they go on in perpetuity makes it difficult to tell a story. Like, stories have to have conclusions to them. Otherwise, they're bad. So, like, Orange is the New Black, I stopped watching because she needs to get out of jail. The whole thing about being in jail is that you don't want to be there. So, unless you set up from the beginning of a TV show where your main character is in prison, that they're never getting out. I mean, I didn't see Oz. Did you ever see Oz?
I've seen bits of it.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what that's, if the guys come and go on that show, but like, a show where people just have to survive is difficult to get through, I feel. And so that's kind of what happened with Orange is the New Black for me. I watched the first season and it was really good. And I began to watch the second one and I went, this isn't really going anywhere, because it can't, because they're all in jail. And, it's not an absurd show. It's very straightforward and realistic. And they all have to stay there until, they get let out. And so it makes a better movie than a TV show. The same thing is kind of true here. We're like, well, what is it that happens? Like, if they're there forever, like, the whole point of the show is she's trying to prove to herself and to everyone there, essentially, that she can be a good person after she died, and that is sufficient enough for her to stay in heaven and not go to hell.
Right. Well, the idea is that she's hiding because you think there's a screw up and that she's not supposed to be there.
Right. And you find out
so
later
she's like,
that.
I have to somehow prove it without getting caught.
Right. Which has a conclusion to it. You know, either, you know, you either get caught or you don't. And like, you can, but so like they've avoided that sort of, you know, very straightforward answer by, you know, by saying you're actually, you've been in the bad place the whole time. And it answered a lot of questions that sort of seemed obvious to me at the time. Like, I remember thinking about, because you watch a lot of flashbacks of all the, like, there's four characters that are really, that are actually former humans versus the rest of the town, which is all people who, you know, are playing former humans to complete the illusion for them.
Yeah, they consider themselves demons and they all work in hell.
Right.
And they're all working there.
So, and going back and looking at all of the, you know, like, so you have the two obvious bad people who are Eleanor and John Yu / Jason, is that what his name is?
Jason, yeah. The drug-dealing rapper DJ from Florida.
Idiot.
Yeah, he's a complete and utter moron.
He's such a good idiot, too. It's hard to play stupid.
Yeah, that guy's very, very good.
And he's really very funny. And then you have two people who are seemingly very good. They, like, the one of them raised like $60 billion for charity when she was alive. The other guy was an ethics professor. And you're watching them in flashbacks sort of stumble through their lives before they died. And the whole time you're kind of thinking, well, boy, they're kind of annoying, or they're not very effective, or they're just, their goodness seems sort of superficial. And like, that was the whole point.
Yeah, they're not that good.
They're not that good. You know, the ethics professor is so riddled with self-contradiction and frustration that, you know, he ends up hurting everyone around him because he can't make up his mind about anything. Like, I thought it was really funny. Like, the guy asks him to be his best man and does like a fake wedding test run. Because I knew you were going to fuck this up, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, you're out. You can't do this anymore.
Right. And then the other woman who was, you know, just trying to get back at her parents and her sister for, you know, by being, and then she says, my motivation wasn't pure. That's why I didn't, you know, I wasn't successful at this. I wasn't actually in the good place. And so it kind of like answers sort of obviously glaring weird things about their personalities that was right in front of your face, but like they didn't distract you from the ruse, which was nice. And it was different and kind of clever and really well done. And I
can tell you, it gets better as it goes.
Yeah,
because it's one of those shows where I enjoy not knowing how the writers are going to get out of it. So like, it ended in that first season, and I'm like, okay, they're in the bad place. Well, then now what do they do? The whole point is that they're in hell, and they deserve to be there. Like,
right, yeah, that part's not in dispute at all.
Right. And so once they figure out, like, you know, and you find out that Ted Danson's character is a bad person, and he's like, his whole idea is, we've been torturing humans for millennia the same way all the time. We rip out their spines, we gouge out their eyeballs. Let's try something new. Let's let them torture each other with their badness and indecisiveness, and we'll let them drive each other crazy. And it doesn't work. And so, and he says at the end, I'll just start over again. I'll reboot you as it were and erase your memories and try again. And so you're like, all right, I guess we'll just watch this guy keep trying. What's the point of that? And then you watch it and you see what happens and you're like, oh, that's actually very good. It's funny. It's clever. It's different.
Yeah.
You know, and the writers I've seen, they say, like, the second season doesn't have a twist at the end like the first season. You can't do a twist like that every year.
No.
But we can keep it going at least a little longer, so. And as I watched it, I was like, this is very, very good.
Yeah.
You know, the difference between people who know what they're doing.
Yeah. I think that's a good parallel between this and Discovery, is that, like, you're right, we don't know how they're going to get out of this. Like, it's, you know, it's such an open question that it could really be anything, but you're sort of excited to see what it, will be, considering how clever the rest of the show has been and how much care they seem to have taken with creating both characters and a setting that are interesting and engaging, versus Discovery, where it's just like, I don't know how they're going to get out of their dilemma, and I don't care all that much either. Mm-hmm. You know, I have no investment in any of the characters in that show, and they can't make up their mind as to what kind of a universe they're going to, literally universe they're trying to play in. And so if I can't latch on, then I'm not going to be invested in seeing how things get resolved or concluded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a small thing. Situations are similar in that, like, I don't know what they could do. But, yeah. You know, it's also not interesting.
I have faith that they'll know what to do. Like, they'll figure it out.
Right. And, you know, it's just a matter of recognizing quality and then trusting moving forward that this is all going to have some kind of a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So, good TV versus bad TV.
Yeah. So, we'll see.
Yes, we will.
Any Super Bowl predictions?
It's a good one. I don't know. My inclination is to say that the Patriots are going to win because it seems to be legally, you know, they're obligated legally to win the game based on last year's Super Bowl. But Jonathan Last over at the Weekly Standard had a really interesting article about why the Eagles really should be America's team. And he broke down, I don't know, I don't follow football that much at all, the Eagles, to say the least. But he was saying that, like, this is not a team that anybody ever wanted to put together. Like, the coach bounced around, the quarterback bounced around. Like, they just play very straightforward fundamentals football, and they're very good at it. And, you know, they're not flashy, and they're not the best. They just, you know, they execute very well. And I didn't like there were details about the players themselves that, like, you know, how one guy had been to like six different teams, and then this is how he ended up. They're at the Super Bowl. Like, this should never have happened. So it's sort of the underdog story that no one's really talking about, because we're also enamored with Tom Brady and his lacerated hand. How did that happen, by the way? Do you know?
I have no idea.
They keep saying he has 10 stitches on his throwing hand.
Yeah.
So.
Didn't seem to slow him down any.
So. No, I don't think the guy is human.
Yeah.
Can't be that good looking.
As long as I get some chicken wings, I'll be happy.
Yeah. So, any thoughts on your end about who's going to win?
You know, you don't want to see New England win anything ever.
No.
But Eagles fans can be so obnoxious.
Yeah, it's just the fans that I can't stand, which is sort of hard to separate. Like, people do that with the Yankees. We're like, I can't. Yankees fans are terrible. And some of them are, actually.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're not.
You know, I feel you and I are exceptions to that. Like,
I'm great, but, you know, the rest of them. They're all awful.
I will say this much. When you talk about fans and how it reflects on the team, I would much rather hang out with a bunch of lady Mets fans than lady Yankees fans. Because most girls I know who are fans of the Yankees are just like, I don't know. It's like they started to like baseball because their boyfriend liked it. Like, they have no real interest in it. But like Mets fans who are girls, like my wife, are real serious baseball fans. And so, as far as like fan relationships to teams go, I've always found that to be interesting, like how, you know, different people behave depending on which team they like. But all Philadelphia fans are just absolutely, especially football, because it engenders so much fanaticism and psychosis. Mm. But they throw batteries at people, for Christ's sake. It's actually dangerous to go to a Philadelphia Eagles game wearing a Giants jersey.
Yeah. No, don't do that.
It's, you know, like, people joke about that all the time in Boston, wearing Yankees stuff. But you could wear a Yankees, you know, jersey to Fenway Park. And yeah, you'll get heckled and you'll get booed, but you're not going to get injured. You know, just if the drunk guy is yelling at you, don't engage with him. And, you know, but that's just any place where drunk people yell at you. You know, like, you're not going to win that argument, so don't try. But, like, you're just going to get hit in the head with a D-cell walking through the parking lot of wherever the hell stadium the Eagles play at if you're wearing the wrong shirt.
You hear that, Philly? People scare us.
Yes. Your cheesesteaks are delicious, but please stop throwing batteries at me. Hmm. I'd appreciate that. So, all right. So I say Patriots by 13.
13. I'm going to say Patriots by 3.
Ooh. Hmm. Interesting. All right. Well, we'll see who's right next time.
Yeah.
Very exciting. Anything else to add?
No. That's it.
All right. Well, as I said, we are available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radios. Just search for Three Drinks In Podcast. You'll find us that way. Press that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Leave us a rating, maybe even a review. We'd really appreciate that. Twitter at the number 3 Drinks In Pod, 3 Drinks In Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And questions, concerns, and comments and complaints can be sent to 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. That's it. As always, please drink responsibly. And we'll talk to you next time.
Yep. Take care, everybody.
Bye.